Good morning and welcome to today's edition of Times the Brief. I'm Harvey Kojan and these are the top stories of the day.
The Supreme Court will take up the case of a Virginia school board that wants to prevent a transgender teenager from using the boys' bathroom at his high school. The justices said Friday they will hear the appeal from the Gloucester County School Board sometime next year. The High Court's order means that student Galvin Grimm will not be able to use the boys' bathroom in the meantime. A lower court had ordered the school board to accommodate Grimm, but justices in August put that order on hold while they considered whether to hear the case. Grimm is a 17-year-old high school senior. This article posted by Mark Sherman and Alana Duncan Risher.
Halloween is the internet's time to shine. Parents experiment with cardboard. Couples document their ability to remix the topical themes of the year, and overachievers go all out with clever creations they make at home. To celebrate the DIY outfits already on social media, those that reference pop culture or are just awesome in general, here's a collection of great Halloween costumes. 1. A gigantic thundercloud. Easily the cutest, if slightly impractical, overall look. A father outfitted his daughter as Princess Cumulus by fashioning a massive ball of cotton clouds with Arduino-powered LED strips to make everything glow from within. This was an update from her El Niño cloud costume from the previous year. 2. Wayne's World. This woman really embraced her bond with her pet, using her canine as the Garth to her Wayne. The flawless execution had already won Reddit over. 3. Teenage Mutant Ninja Pups. This Redditor's teenage mutant, Dogatello, is no slouch either. 4. Star Wars transportation goals. This little boy's costume went viral naturally, because he went all out as Jedi Knight Luke Skywalker, who prefers to travel on his personal Tauntaun snow beast instead of being held by his parents as he roams for treats. 5. Hot Wheels. But nothing beats this Darth Vader costume on Daniel Shaughnessy. Volunteers decked out his wheelchair with a model of the Star Wars vehicle TIE Fighter, built to give the fan who is currently battling brain cancer and spinal cancer an intergalactic Halloween and one heck of an entrance, reported WSLS-10. 6. Ghostbusters. Somebody give Jeremy Miller's father a book deal already, because apparently he ups the ante every Halloween. This dad turned his 8-year-old's wheelchair into the Ecto-1 Ghostbusters rescue ride, which is basically so on point it's a replica of the one in the movie. Watch him embrace the spirit of the film. Number 7. E.T. costume. To show major love to the 80s classic E.T., Stephanie Pokorny essentially stitched magic together to create this hooded masterpiece for her 2-year-old son Jack, according to ABC. 8. Macaroni and cheese. One part pop art, 100% surprising. Grayson Liam's ambitious mom made him into a bowl of Easy Mac using yellow-painted toilet paper rolls. Her son, who's obsessed with the microwavable entree, then stood in a laundry basket covered with paper mache, according to the kitchen via Recipe from Heaven. 9. Gamer Family. It can be hard to coordinate a family costume, but this Japan-based family worked as a group to piece together this elaborate Nintendo-inspired costume for the Ru-Ray Twitter competition. 10. The uber-dedicated soccer team went full squad goals by recreating all the looks from the Alice in Wonderland Disney flick into this picture that could be the poster for a staged adaptation. 10. Bob Ross. A simple idea with major throwback appeal. This DIYer went for television's chill landscape artist in process. Bob Ross. 12. The Brave Little Toaster. This Redditor went from an old-school aesthetic courtesy of the 1987 animated movie, The Brave Little Toaster. No facial expression required. 13. Lumiere from Beauty and the Beast. John Sundquist, a Paralympic ski athlete and regular Halloween pro, essentially became Beauty and the Beast's charming French host, Lumiere, in his latest costume. It features a golden lame fabric outfit and a poster board candle head, dripping with modeling clay as the wax, topped off with a nose attachment that's glued on with spirit gum. To view all of the pictures, please visit time.com, Best Viral Halloween Costumes 2016. This article was written by Ashley Hoffman. Cyrus shares her personal photos exclusively with Time. To view all of the photos, visit this article on Time.com. When? Afternoon of Saturday, October 22, 2016. Where? George Mason University, Fairfax, Virginia. What? Going dorm to dorm campaigning for Hillary Clinton. Why? To encourage young people to vote on November 8th and to discuss how the outcome of this election will affect our future. When? Evening of Saturday, October 22, 2016. Where? United States Supreme Court Building, Washington, D.C. What? Attending a rehearsal dinner hosted by Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor in celebration of Bill Murray. Why? To honor Bill and celebrate his incredible work. When? Afternoon of Sunday, October 23, 2016. Where? Washington, D.C. What? Being a tourist and learning more about the history of our country and how we became the land of the free. Why? Out of all the times I've traveled to the Capitol, I've never had the opportunity to explore and appreciate all of its monumental landmarks. When? Evening of Sunday, October 23, 2016. Where? The Kennedy Center, Washington, D.C. What? The 19th Annual Mark Twain Prize for American Humor, honoring Bill Murray. Why? To perform Bill Did It His Way, a mashup of the Frank Sinatra and then Sid Vicious classic, customized for Murray's special night. This article was written by Miley Cyrus.
A plane caught fire at O'Hare International Airport in Chicago on Friday after a tire blew on the runway while the aircraft was preparing to take off, federal officials said. Passengers were evacuated through the airplane chutes and there were no serious injuries. Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, spokesman Tony Molinaro told the United Press. However, the aircraft engine was damaged in the blaze. American Airlines Flight 383 was leaving Chicago and headed to Miami when takeoff was aborted due to an engine-related mechanical issue. American Airlines and the FAA said in a statement, there were 161 passengers and 9 crew members on board the Boeing 767. We are taking care of our customers and crew and are reaccommodating our passengers on another flight to Miami this evening, the airline said in a statement. Images and video circulating on social media show black smoke billowing from the plane as people gaze at the blaze from afar. Emergency responders were on the scene. Chicago Fire had announced an emergency at O'Hare, saying on Twitter there was an aircraft down at the airport. The FAA said it is investigating the incident. This story posted by Melissa Chan.
ISIS militants in the Iraqi city of Mosul have reportedly executed at least 232 people and forced thousands of others to relocate at gunpoint in order to transform them into human shields, the United Nations Human Rights Office said on Friday. The apparent executions and forced movements suggest the jihadist group is turning to increasingly brutal measures as it attempts to defend Mosul from a large-scale military offensive launched on October 17th, meant to restore government control over the city, which was once Iraq's second largest. The UN's Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights said that Islamic State operatives forced thousands of families from 4 separate sub-districts of Mosul to move to ISIS strongholds. As a result, population of the town of Hammam al-Alil, south of Mosul, recently swelled from 23,000 to 60,000. The document cited credible reports received by the UN. According to the UN, the 232 people executed include 190 former members of the Iraqi security forces who were killed last Wednesday at al-Ghazlani military base in Mosul. Reports indicate that another 42 civilians were shot in the head at Al-Issa military base after they refused to join ISIS, the statement adds. Supported by the U.S.-led international coalition, the Iraqi military and Kurdish militias mobilized tens of thousands of troops last week in an attempt to dislodge ISIS from Mosul, the largest city under the extremist group's control. The jihadists have held the city since they seized it in a lightning sweep across Iraq in June 2014. The battle signals the turning of the tide in the international war against the group, following months in which ISIS has lost control of major cities in Iraq and key sections of its territory in Syria. but ISIS is currently mounting a ferocious defense of Mosul, including the use of snipers, improvised bombs, and dozens of suicide bombers. Weeks or possibly months of hard fighting lie ahead before the city is retaken. The UN statement issued on Friday is consistent with the testimony of Iraqi civilians who recently fled ISIS-held areas of northern Iraq interviewed by Time in recent days. Their accounts suggest that in recent weeks, ISIS has tightened its system of social control in anticipation of the attack on Mosul, and also increased the number of executions of suspected smugglers, former members of the Iraqi security forces, and others who ran afoul of the organization. They're putting the bodies on stockades so people walking in the street can see them. There's a bad smell in the city, said Miriam Mohammed Hamad, 21, who recently fled the ISIS-controlled city of Hawija in an interview in the Debaga displacement camp outside the town of Mahmur. She said the bodies were executed smugglers as well as members of the Iraqi army killed in battle. Hawija, a city with an estimated population of 115,000, is now cut off from Mosul, the much larger city to the north, following an Iraqi army offensive that severed the north-south highway. As a result, residents who recently fled say the price of food has soared. A bottle of oil can cost as much as 100,000 Iraqi dinars, or about $85. A kilo of rice cost up to $36, according to Hamad. In addition, ISIS has tightened its ultra-conservative restrictions on everyday life. If they see anyone smoking, they'll punish them immediately, maybe kill them. The system is tough, she said. Several former residents of ISIS-controlled areas said that increasingly severe treatment of civilians is eroding the degree of popular support that existed for the group. In the beginning, people liked them. They treated people in a good way, but the punishments are harsh, says Omar Walid Mohammed, 20, from the town of Qayyara, south of Mosul, which the Iraqi military retook last August. Within the city of Mosul, some residents are also now actively resisting ISIS in anticipation of the coming battle, according to multiple reports and residents who fled the city. They don't show up, they just kill ISIS fighters, and they hide themselves. No one knows who they are, said a 60-year-old man from Mosul who fled with his family about 2 months ago. In an interview in a displacement camp near Qayyara, he asked to have his name withheld for fear of retaliation from ISIS. ISIS officials have also intensified measures to cut civilians off from the outside world, confiscating satellite dishes and other equipment. ISIL has seized many SIM cards, and those who successfully manage to hide them fear to use them, according to an anonymous blogger who writes under the name Mosul Eye and claims to be reporting from inside Mosul. Mosul has entered the atmosphere of the war. The bombardment is continuous on many areas of the city, the writer also said. This article posted by Jared Malzin.
The quest for the Fountain of Youth is getting a boost from an international team of researchers who may have stumbled upon a compound that appears to make cells act younger than they are, at least in mice. In a paper published in Cell Metabolism, researchers, led by the Washington University School of Medicine, reported that they found an agent that can balance out what happens in aging cells to essentially make them behave as they would in a younger mouse. That substance, as it turns out, is also found in a number of natural foods, including broccoli, cucumbers, cabbage, and edamame. The compound, called nicotinamide mononucleotide, or NMN, is involved in producing another compound that is critical for energy metabolism. When they gave normal aging mice infusions of NMN, they made more of that energy-fueling compound, and some of the biological problems associated with aging went away. The NMN-treated animals did not gain as much weight, they were able to convert food into energy more efficiently, their blood sugar was better, even their eyesight improved. The mice receiving NMN were also able to prevent some of the genetic changes associated with aging. Most lab mice live just several years, so the researchers started the NMN treatments at 5 months and continued them for a year. The study did not track whether the mice actually live longer, but with lower rates of age-related disease, that's the assumption. So, can you load up on broccoli or cabbage and extend your life?
If you do the math, I wouldn't say it's impossible entirely, but probably very difficult to get the whole amount you need simply from natural foods, says Dr. Shin Ichiro Imai, a professor of developmental biology and medicine at Washington University and senior author of the paper. The results are encouraging enough that part of the team, based at Keio University in Tokyo, is launching an early study on people using supplements of NMN in pill form. It's clear that in humans and in rodents, we lose energy with age, says Imai. We are losing the enzyme NMN, but if we can bypass that process by adding NMN, we can make energy again. These results provide a very important foundation for the human studies. The findings are also in line with other anti-aging compounds that have shown promise in animal studies, including things like 3-diabetes drugs, which are also involved in energy-making processes. All of these pathways crosstalk with each other, says Imai. We don't know the precise details of how, but they are communicating with each other. The hope is that the human studies will provide even more information about how to keep cells young and maybe halt or at least hold off the diseases that typically creep in as cells get older and lose their function. This article posted by Alice Park. It was the decision seemingly everyone in Britain had been waiting for. Wednesday night, Candace Brown, a 31-year-old phys ed teacher from Bedfordshire, won the 7th season of the Great British Bake Off. If you're unfamiliar with Bake Off, shown on PBS in the U.S. under the rather unimaginative title The Great British Baking Show, take a typical reality TV show and remove the clashing egos, dramatic tantrums, tearful backstories, and direct-to-camera bitching sessions. Add big helpings of good humor and camaraderie, a spoonful of smutty innuendo, and a sprinkling of cutaway shots of lambs gambling in a field. An hour of low heat, and it's ready to serve to 14 million viewers each week. What happens is this. Inside a large tent in the pastoral surroundings of an English country house, a dozen candidates compete to see who can make the best cakes, pies, and other baked goods. They are ordinary people, not shiny-toothed fame school graduates, and usually represent a broad range of backgrounds and ethnicities. Each week, one is singled out as the star baker, and one is chosen to leave. The last three face off in the final. There is a lot of hugging, occasional tears, and very little drama. This year, however, there was drama aplenty offstage as Love Productions, the independent television company that made Bake Off for the publicly funded BBC, decided to move the show to a different network for a lot more dough. Uproar ensued in the press and among the show's huge fan base. The show's presenters, Mel Giedroyce and Sue Perkins, chose to leave the show rather than go with it to Channel 4. One of its judges, Mary Berry, whose genteel politesse have made her a saintly figure among fans, also decided to hang up her apron. The other, Paul Hollywood, is staying in the tent and has become the pantomime villain of the saga. To understand why this departure was so shocking, it's necessary to know a little bit about the roles Bake Off and the BBC play in the national consciousness here in the UK. To many viewers, this kind of cozy, unchallenging television is what the BBC is for. Not for nothing is the corporation sometimes nicknamed Anti. During prime time, its two main channels offer a reliably safe space for middle-of-the-road fare, and the perfect place for a show like Bake Off that kids can happily watch with their grandparents. The move to Channel 4, known as an edgy youth-oriented network, which introduced the UK to Big Brother, was seen as a betrayal of those values, even though everyone involved has insisted that the spirit of Bake Off will survive the move. The furor over Bake Off's departure from the BBC came just a few months after Britain voted to leave the EU, and it's tempting to draw comparisons between the two. Both Bake Off and Brexit have at their centers a conservative vision of a Britain that doesn't exist, A comfortable land of plenty, decorated with bunting and rustic paraphernalia, where hard work is celebrated over idleness, where values and fair play trump vitriol and bullying, and where issues like hardship and inequality have been quietly edited out. Where diversity is to be welcomed, but authorities have rigid control over who can stay and who must leave the tent. Just as Brexit voters are craving a Britain a little more like the Bake Off tent, the show succumbed to the realities of the market, where an advertising-supported network was able to outbid one that runs on public funding. The market, too, will steer the course of Brexit, though just how turbulent things will get is a matter of great debate. Just recently, it threatened to deprive us of Marmite, which seemed an ominous sign of things to come. But economic growth post-Brexit has defied expectations. Of course, Channel 4 will aim to keep the potent infusion of cheery fellowship and rose-tinted nostalgia that made Bake Off a hit. But viewers will be likely to know they're watching something different, a more commercial and perhaps self-consciously whimsical version of the show. The Bake Off we once knew has gone. Meanwhile, our government will go into Britain's negotiations on leaving the EU, hoping to maintain the economic bonds we have in Europe, but with the freedom to set our own limits on immigration. Like Channel 4, it may find it's hard to both have your cake and eat it. This article posted by Dan Stewart in London. The PC industry is in crisis, and it's our fault. We used to use our home computers for everything from checking email to surfing the web to listening to music. Now we're doing that with our smartphones, tablets, and even voice-controlled internet-connected speakers. These shifts in consumer behavior have thrown the PC market into freefall. Global shipments dropped 3.9% year-over-year this past quarter, according to the research firm IDC. Computer makers like Lenovo and HP have responded by trying to make their PCs more like tablets. Their 2-in-1 hybrid devices can work as both a desktop and a tablet, powered by Microsoft's touchscreen-friendly Windows 10. There's evidence the market for these hybrids is growing, but that hasn't been enough to stop the bleeding. The total available market for shipping PCs into the home is getting smaller and smaller, says IDC analyst Lin Huang. Even in this grim environment, Apple and rival Microsoft aren't giving up on PCs. Both companies this week unveiled new computers that, taken together, offer a glimpse of what the future holds for desktops and laptops. With Apple's new MacBook Pro laptop, the standout feature is a touchscreen strip called the Touch Bar. It offers different functionality depending on what app the user has open. Launch iTunes and you'll see playback controls. Switch to Safari and you'll see a list of your open tabs. The Touch Bar also packs Apple's Touch ID fingerprint scanner, enabling mobile payments and lightning-fast switching between user accounts. Microsoft's new Surface Studio, meanwhile, is a behemoth desktop with a built-in hinge that allows it to lie nearly flat. When combined with the firm's Surface Pen stylus and new Surface Dial control input, the Studio offers an experience more akin to using a drawing desk or an easel than a computer. It's a bold effort for what is, believe it or not, the four-decade-old firm's first desktop computer. Taken together, Apple's new MacBook Pro and Microsoft's Surface Studio are an acknowledgement of a reality facing PC vendors. Desktops and laptops are increasingly becoming more useful as professional tools than consumer gadgets. That explains the flashy new features. You and I probably don't need a desktop that folds down to a 20-degree angle, but an architect or graphic artist might. It also justifies their sky-high cost. The MacBook Pros with the Touch Bar start at $1,799, while the Surface Studio will set you back at least $2,999. Those price tags are tough for an everyday user to justify, but professionals might see the machines as an investment if they're making money by using them. Indeed, while unveiling the new MacBook Pro, Apple pitched its Touch Bar as a boon for video and photo editors, DJs, artists, and other creatives. Microsoft's Surface Studio reveal, meanwhile, was crafted to pitch the computer and dial accessory as a content creator's dream. Meanwhile, if you're a student writing a term paper or a parent uploading pictures to Facebook, you're probably fine with a tablet or hybrid like an iPad or Surface Pro or an inexpensive computer like a Chromebook. To be sure, there are other computer makers out there offering mid-range desktops and laptops, mostly running Windows, but Apple and Microsoft at least appear convinced that the PC is for professionals, and speedier processors, sharper screens, and better keyboards alone aren't enough to entice them to buy new computers. The situation is different for office workers, says IDC's Huang, who will be long tied to the PC. All this is important because of Apple and Microsoft's stature in the technology world. Apple has long been a trendsetter in PCs. The first MacBook Air was a revelation, heralding the age of the Ultrabook. Microsoft is a comparatively new player in hardware, but its bold efforts like the Surface Book are attracting well-deserved attention. That said, neither company makes much of their money from desktops and laptops, and that isn't likely to change. But the computers these two firms produce could very well set the tone for the PCs of the future. That being true, expect plenty more high-powered, feature-packed, very expensive machines. The rest of us, meanwhile, will keep on swiping at our smartphones. This article posted by Lisa Iadicio. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe has opposed the Dakota Access Pipeline since first learning about plans for it in 2014, but it's only been in recent months that the issue has gained national attention as thousands of protesters, including many Native Americans, have gathered in North Dakota in an attempt to block the 1,200-mile project. And with both supporters and opponents vowing to fight through the harsh North Dakota winter, the battle shows no signs of ending anytime soon. Here's what you need to know. What is the Dakota Access Pipeline? The pipeline is to be built by Texas-based Energy Transfer Partners and is designed to transport as many as 570,000 barrels of crude oil daily from North Dakota to Illinois. The pipeline would be a key conduit connecting oil wells in the state's Bakken Shale, where the development of fracking has opened billions of gallons of new oil to recovery, to other valuable consumer markets, including the Gulf Coast, Midwest, and East Coast. The nearly $4 billion project was first proposed in 2014 with an anticipated completion of this year. Why are the Sioux and others protesting the project? The pipeline has united a number of different interest groups with a variety of objections, but Native Americans have been at the center of the opposition. The pipeline would travel underneath the Missouri River, the primary drinking water source for the Standing Rock Sioux, a tribe of around 10,000 with a reservation in the central part of North and South Dakota. Builders of the pipeline insist that they've taken extraordinary measures to safeguard against disaster, but opponents point out that even the safest pipelines can leak. The Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, the PHMSA, has reported more than 3,300 incidents of leaks and ruptures at oil and gas pipelines since 2010, and even the smallest spill could damage the tribe's water supply. The Standing Rock Sioux also argue that the pipeline traverses a sacred burial ground, and while the land being used for the pipeline is not technically on its reservation, tribal leaders argue that the federal government did not adequately engage the Standing Rock Sioux during the permitting process, a requirement under federal law. More broadly, environmental activists say the pipeline would contribute man-made climate change by building up the country's oil infrastructure. They insist that fossil fuels, including the vast reserves in the Bakken Shale, need to be kept in the ground to protect the world from the worst effects of climate change. Proponents of the pipeline argue that oil producers would likely ship the oil by rail line if construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline was halted, as much of the oil produced in North Dakota already is, an argument that was also used in favor of the now-canceled Keystone XL Pipeline. How have opponents and supporters responded? Opponents of the project have responded with both protests and litigation in an attempt to slow and eventually stop the pipeline. The protests began months ago with a core group of attendees and have heated up recently as the issue gained more attention. There are now thousands of people at the construction site or in a nearby encampment, according to the tribe. Protesters have set up teepee and tent camps on land owned by Energy Transfer Partners to slow the progress of construction and have threatened to block the highway. More recently, celebrities and public figures like actor Shailene Woodley, actor Mark Ruffalo, and civil rights activist Jesse Jackson have traveled to North Dakota in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux. The most dedicated protesters say they will remain through winter, even though the average low temperature in North Dakota reaches 0 degrees Fahrenheit in those months. The tribe has also sued the Army Corps of Engineers, which permitted the project, alleging that the agency violated the National Historic Preservation Act, the NHPA, and the National Environmental Policy Act, the NEPA. The NHPA requires the agency to consider the cultural significance of federally permitted sites and NEPA to consider the implications for the waterways. The litigation is ongoing, though a court rejected an argument that construction should be halted while the case winds through the courts. Supporters of the pipeline, which include state and local government leaders, have showed little interest in accommodating the project's critics, particularly the protesters on the ground. North Dakota Governor Jack Dalrymple has called in the National Guard as well as an army of other police officials. More than 140 people were arrested this week, even as construction on the pipeline has continued. Protesters and tribal leaders have accused officials of unnecessarily rough treatment. Police have used pepper spray, rubber bullets, and concussion cannons, among other tactics, according to the tribe. Amy Goodman, a journalist with Democracy Now!, was arrested while covering the protest for allegedly trespassing. Footage she captured showed police officers allowing their dogs to charge protesters. How has the federal government responded? The Obama administration, including the Army Corps of Engineers, the Department of Justice, and the Department of Interior, temporarily blocked construction of the project in September in hopes of conducting a review, but a federal court intervened to allow the project to proceed. President Obama has taken no additional steps and has said nothing officially about the pipeline, but has come to the defense of protesters, saying, "You're making your voices heard," at a White House event for tribal leaders. What do the presidential candidates say? The federal government has authority over the project's permits, and the next administration would have the power to cancel the project or at least revoke its permits after further assessment. Hillary Clinton declined to take a firm stance, calling for both sides to find a path forward that serves the broadest public interest. Donald Trump, who owns stock in Energy Transfer Partners, has called for the removal of regulations on the oil and gas industry, but has not commented specifically on the pipeline. Is the Dakota Access Pipeline the next Keystone XL? The Dakota Access Pipeline has drawn parallels to the Keystone XL pipeline. Opposition to that project, which Obama eventually rejected, became a litmus test in the eyes of some activists for public officials to show their commitment to addressing environmental issues. But at the same time, significant differences remain. Perhaps most importantly, Keystone crossed into Canada, making it an international issue that gave authority over its final approval to the State Department. The federal government has the authority over the Dakota Access Pipeline because it crosses interstate waterways. Stopping the project would be a heavier lift for any administration. This article posted by Justin Worland.
In a normal election year, when a nominee for a major political party is not questioning the fundamental process undergirding our 240-year-old democracy, voting machines malfunction. Occasionally, they malfunction in such a way that votes appear temporarily to be flipped. A voter intends to vote for candidate A, but candidate B's name is selected on the screen. This kind of glitch, known aptly as vote flipping, happens very rarely. Out of tens of millions of votes cast, there have been a few hundred reports of vote flipping every year for the past decade. This year is no exception. A handful of counties in North Carolina, Texas, and Nevada have reported isolated problems with machines vote flipping in the last couple weeks. But this time round, with Donald Trump alleging on an almost daily basis that the election is being rigged, and with unfounded rumors of Russian hackers undermining election results, these run-of-the-mill machine errors have taken on a dark air of conspiracy. A lot of call-ins about vote flipping at the voting booths in Texas, Trump tweeted Thursday morning. People are not happy. Big lines. What is going on? Commenters on Breitbart.com, a conservative website formerly run by Donald Trump's campaign manager Stephen Bannon, have also seized on early reports of vote flipping as evidence that the election is indeed being stolen by a murky cabal of Washington insiders, the mainstream media, and the Clinton campaign. The truth is much more banal. Voting machines are more than a decade old. They're sticky and glitchy, and people make mistakes. You have to remember that the majority of the machines in use today predate the iPhone or the iPad, and most of them use technology from the late 90s. Lawrence Norden, a voting technology expert at the Brennan Center for Justice in New York, told Time, "As these machines age, you start to have hardware issues. For example, as the glue that attaches the screen to the machine gets degraded, you get alignment issues," Norden explained. Poll workers and technicians have to recalibrate these machines regularly to ensure the buttons are aligned correctly, he said. In other cases, it's a problem of plain old user error, said Pamela Smith, the president of Verified Voting, a nonpartisan organization that advocates for accurate and transparent elections. In Texas, for example, where a handful of voters reported attempting to vote a straight Republican ticket but found the Clinton-Cain ticket selected instead, many precincts use an old rotary-style voting machine. If you're used to using a mouse and then you're asked to use a trackpad, it's easy to make a mistake, Smith told Time. It's not difficult to imagine that a handful of voters might have the dial land on the wrong line by accident, she said. But if and when mistakes like that happen, she added, voters can go back and fix them. If you select one candidate and the other appears on the screen, or if you're looking at the summary screen and something doesn't look right, you can go back to any of the contests and make a change, she told Time. And if, for any reason, you don't trust the machine you're using, she said, voters should notify the local officials. Ask a polling worker to cancel out your session or use a new machine or cast a paper ballot, she said. Another way that voters can protect themselves, Smith added, is to double-check their voting machine's paper printouts. In states like North Carolina, where there have been several reports of vote flipping during early voting in the past few days, all machines produce a hard copy paper printout of every vote cast. That's your ballot. That's what gets checked during an audit, she said. Norton, who has pushed for state and federal governments to invest in new voting machines, says recent concerns over vote flipping should be seen in the larger context of allegations of election rigging. If you really stop to think about it, vote flipping doesn't make sense as a way to rig the election, he said. If that was your goal, you wouldn't tell a voter on the screen that they had selected a different candidate. You wouldn't make it possible for them to notify authorities or correct their vote. Kay Stimson of the National Association of Secretaries of State said the real problem is the current climate of conspiracy, which threatens to undermine the legitimacy of the election itself. 36 states are currently overseeing some form of early voting, and the overwhelming majority of precincts have not reported any problems, she said. In the isolated areas where there have been reports of vote flipping, officials have taken the appropriate steps to recalibrate the machines, and in some instances have taken them out of circulation. In Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, for example, two machines were removed from a polling place after complaints of vote flipping, according to National Public Radio. Technicians were not able to later duplicate the problem. There's a lot of anxiety about rigged elections and Russian hackers, so this kind of concern could give people the wrong impression about the legitimacy of the process, said Stimson. There's a real concern that that kind of rhetoric could blow up. This article posted by Haley Sweetland Edwards.
The FBI is examining additional emails related to Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server 4 months after closing its investigation, the Bureau's director said in a letter to lawmakers on Friday, a surprise twist in a turbulent campaign just 11 days before Election Day. In a note to congressional committee chairs, FBI Director James Comey said that the FBI had discovered additional emails relevant to the investigation into Clinton's server and that agents were examining the emails to determine whether they contain classified information. The newly discovered emails were not found on Clinton's private server, the Associated Press reported, and came to light as part of a separate case. In connection with an unrelated case, the FBI has learned of the existence of emails that appear to be pertinent to the investigation, said Comey. I'm writing to inform you that the investigative team briefed me on this yesterday, and I agreed that the FBI should take appropriate investigative steps designed to allow investigators to review these emails to determine whether they contain classified information, as well as to assess their importance to our investigation. There was no additional information about what information the emails contain or how long the investigation could take. Also unknown is what the unrelated case is that led to the FBI discovering additional emails. Clinton's use of a private email server during her time as Secretary of State has become a central issue of the campaign. After a months-long investigation, the FBI decided in July not to recommend criminal charges against Clinton, saying there was no prosecutorial precedent to do so. At question in the investigation was the former Secretary of State's handling of classified information. The FBI found that in a handful of instances, classified email was discovered on Clinton's personal server. House Speaker Paul Ryan quickly released a statement criticizing Clinton. Yet again, Hillary Clinton has nobody but herself to blame. She was entrusted with some of our nation's most important secrets, and she betrayed that trust by carelessly mishandling highly classified information. Clinton's aides appeared caught off guard by the news on Friday and did not immediately respond to questions from traveling reporters. I've got to read more, Senator Tim Kaine, Clinton's running mate, said, campaigning in Florida. I've got to read a little more. This article posted by Sam Frizzell.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Harvey Kojan, and you've been listening to the Daily Edition of Times the Brief. To get this sent to your inbox every morning, go to time.com/thebrief. You can also subscribe through iTunes or your favorite podcast app. I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, enjoy the day.